You're listening to HuntertonChamberRadio.com, sponsored by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce. Our studios are located in the CenturyLink building at 14 Mine Street, Flemington, New Jersey. The content and views of our hosts do not necessarily reflect the views of the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce. To contact our station, call 908-782-7115 or email onair@hunterdon-chamber.org. Thank you to our sponsors and underwriters. Please remember to support them and buy Hunterdon, buy local. Visit www.hunterdonchamberradio.com for a complete listing of our programming.
Test in three states. Sharper, who was a member of the Saints team that won the Super Bowl in 2010, has been jailed since charges were filed in Los Angeles early last year. I'm Sandy Kozel.
Police in Malaysia say they are holding 17 suspected militants for allegedly plotting to carry out terror attacks in Kuala Lumpur. Two of them had just returned from Syria. Officials say since last year they have arrested 92 people believed to be supporters of ISIS. The U.S. Supreme Court won't hear an appeal from a former government subcontractor seeking to sue the U.S. government for negligence over his five-year imprisonment in Cuba. The justices let stand a federal appeals court ruling that threw out Alan Gross's $60 million lawsuit blaming the federal government for failing to prepare him for the risks of working in Cuba. The U.S. Court of Appeals for the District of Columbia ruled last year that the U.S. government is immune from claims arising in a foreign country. U.S. stock indexes opened lower following a weak jobs report late last week. The government reported Friday that employers added just 126,000 new jobs in March, the smallest gain since December 2013. I'm Kelly Sloan, and you're listening to USA Radio News.
The news is sponsored by Patton Heide & Associates, a financial advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc.
Americans believe they should be in charge of their own future, how they'll live tomorrow. Since 1894, Ameriprise Financial has worked for their clients' futures, helping millions of Americans retire on their own terms, when they want, where they want, doing what they want. Today, Patton Heide & Associates, a financial advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., remains true to the vision of always putting clients first. They are ready to help you put a confident retirement more within your reach. Put the strength of a leader in retirement planning to work for you through a personal one-to-one relationship. Patton Heide & Associates will work with you to develop a plan to help you achieve your retirement goals. Call today at 908-713-6600. That's 908-713-6600. Office is located at 1318 Route 31 North, Annandale, New Jersey. Ameriprise Financial Services, Incorporated, member FINRA and SIPC.
The weather this afternoon is mostly sunny with a high near 71. Southwest winds around 11 miles per hour. Tonight there's a chance of showers after 10 p.m., mostly cloudy with a low around 50. South winds around 9 miles an hour, and the chance of precipitation is 40%. Tuesday, showers mainly after 9 a.m., high near 62, light southwest winds, and the chance of precipitation is 80%. The new precipitation amounts of less than a tenth of an inch is possible. Tuesday night is rain, low around 44, northeast winds 8 to 10 miles an hour with gusts as high as 20 miles per hour. Chance of precipitation is 90%. New precipitation amounts of a quarter and a half an inch possible. Wednesday's rain likely, mainly before 9 a.m., then it'll be cloudy with a high near 44. Northeast winds 8 to 11 miles an hour with gusts as high as 21 miles per hour. And it could be a chance of precipitation also, and Wednesday night is a chance of rain before 3 a.m. And then a chance of rain and sleet, lovely. Cloudy with a low around 36, and the chance of precipitation is 50%. Well, that's the lovely weather forecast for the week. I'm Larry Cartwright, your host of Mental Health Matters, and this is NAMI's portion, hour, compliments of the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce. NAMI is the National Alliance on Mental Illness. There is a chapter of NAMI in every county in the state of New Jersey, every state in the union, and overseas. In Hunterdon County, we're all volunteers. We work out of our homes. We have no paid staff or no office. And we try to help families and individuals who are going through a issue with mental illness. We teach classes. In fact, my wife and I are teaching one. We're in the middle of a class right now. It's a 12-week course. We're going to be week six this Thursday. And it's for families or, you know, relatives or anyone who knows someone or is related to someone who is going through a mental illness. We run support groups, we do presentations, anything we can do to help people, and that's what it's all about. Today, we're very fortunate to have with us, you guys on the line there? Doctor, are you there? Well, I have to, we have supposedly have Dr. Ricardo Barrago on the phone, but something evidently didn't go right. He's a board certified anesthesiologist and a co-founder and director of Eagle Advancement Institute in West Bloomfield, Michigan. Dr. Barrago specializes in addiction medication and non-narcotic pain management. He's also the co-developer of Eagle Advancement Institute's patented Clarity Intensive Outpatient Opiate Treatment, and is an expert in medically assisted detoxification therapies for opiate dependency and addiction through the use of minimal sedation techniques. Dr. Bergaro, are you there? Well, we must have got disconnected. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to play a commercial and try to get the doctor back on the line. Okay? So you're listening to Mental Health Matters.
Did you know that 1 in 5 people are affected by mental illness? NAMI Hunterdon is the locally affiliate for NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness. We are all volunteers, and all our programs are free of charge. We offer Family to Family, a 12-week course for families that have an adult member with a mental illness. Another popular program is In Our Own Voice, where individuals who are living with mental illness discuss their challenges and their progress in overcoming those challenges. Another course we offer is Basics, a 6-week course for families with a child or an adolescent who has experienced
mental illness. Hi, this is Larry. Are you there, doctor?
We also have a monthly support
group. Okay, I don't know what happened, but
third Thursday
sort of got
month.
Messed up.
Please call NAMI Hunter.
All right, so we're back. And
284-0500 for more information about any of our programs or to join. NAMI Hunter,
if I can get this right,
the voice for mental health in Hunterdon County.
I'm going to see if we can do this, all right? So hang on, don't hang up.
Are you dead, doctor?
The Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce is a Forward New Jersey Coalition member.
For too long in America, we've been putting off funding infrastructure, saying we'll cross that bridge when we come to it. But on August 1st, 2007, hundreds of vehicles tried crossing the I-35 bridge in Minneapolis, Minnesota, and disaster struck. The I-35 bridge collapsed. 13 people were killed, 145 were injured, and traffic was obstructed for over a year. It didn't have to happen. Years before, inspectors had rated the bridge structurally deficient, but they were ignored. In New Jersey, we have 479 bridges carrying 8.2 million vehicles a day that are rated worse, and we can't afford to ignore that. As of June 30th, the state's Transportation Trust Fund will be empty. We need to replenish it so that our roads and bridges can be fixed and future problems prevented. And we can. Go to forwardnewjersey.com to find out how. Paid for by Forward New Jersey.
Are you there, doctor? Doctor?
Rab Coins of Flemington, New Jersey has been in business for over 37 years. We are highly competitive buyers of gold, silver, and platinum coins, jewelry, and scrap metals, and have recently been named the exclusive gold buyer for Diamond Nation and HealthQuest. We also provide professional appraisals, sales, and liquidation services for individuals, law firms, estate trustees, and bank trust departments in New Jersey.
Are you there, doctor?
Products and services include gold and silver, American and foreign coins, certified rare date and modern coins.
Doctor, are you there?
I'm here. Can you hear me?
You're probably going to have to speak up a little because it's very, very, very low.
How about now? Can you hear me? Can you hear me better?
A little better. If you could go a little louder, it would be great.
Yeah, you sound kind of muffled, but yeah, I could. How about there?
That's better. Okay. I read all your background first. I don't know if you heard it or not, but I did. And we also have Kevin on the line, who's the founder and principal of, was it Avera Strategies? And is Kevin right there?
I'm here.
Okay, Kevin. I'm going to ask you a quick question, Kevin. What is your company that you started and are a principal of? What does it do?
Oh, I am a company that helps companies that provide unique services, ways of getting that message out to people who need to understand what services are available to them, or what, in this case, what kinds of advancements are being made in medical science.
Okay. And how did you get into this?
Like anyone else would, I was in a position to find a career out of college, and I started in a practice called public relations, and moved into marketing, and today I help companies like Eagle Advancement Institute connect with the medical community and other sorts of folks that need to understand what they have to contribute.
That's pretty awesome, actually. Dr. Bergaro, is there an opium addiction in this country? And if so, how bad is it?
It's Dr. Borrego.
Oh, and, I'm sorry.
That's fine. With regards to your question, the opiate addiction in general, which speaks of a slew of different things all the way from heroin down to the painkiller, pain medications that or have become addicted to, has actually become quite an epidemic in the last 10 years, where typically drug addiction was a low socioeconomic regarded illness, shall we say, and now it's become very suburban and working class, and it is risen to epidemic levels where it's infiltrating a lot of places people would not think it would.
Exactly. Just last week in the local weekly paper, we're in Hunterdon County, New Jersey, and Hunterdon County and the state of New Jersey is supposedly the richest county in the state and one of the, I think, top five richest in the country. And I don't know why I live here, but I do. But they were just saying in the county how the use of heroin and opium has skyrocketed over the last year and a half. So if it's doing it here in this supposedly, you know, white collar upper income area, I can't imagine what it's doing in cities, you know, like New York or Detroit or, you know, L.A. It's very sad, really.
Yeah. And that's the whole premise behind it. And I think I ran across an article, was it in Hunterdon?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
In New Jersey, actually, where, and a lot of other suburban towns you find across the country, what is occurring, the use, and when I say the use, you know, how, you know, young or even well-to-do, older, working class people are dabbling back in now in heroin. And
right.
The use of heroin has, you mentioned also, has skyrocketed to the point where in this small suburban New Jersey area, in just last month, they had as many deaths and or related complications from heroin use in the first quarter of this year than they have had in the entire prior years.
Right.
And this
right.
is happening all around suburbia, not in the low socioeconomic areas, but the neighbor, the teacher, the students. It's rampant everywhere.
Yeah.
And it starts with, you know, pain medication, the oxycodones, the mm-hmm. the Norcos, and escalates to the use of heroin. And a lot of that is, you know, pills become harder to come by or more
right.
expensive. Heroin has become much more affordable.
Yes, and that's what shocked me.
Which is sad.
Yeah, really sad.
We refer to it as affordable.
Right. I was talking to a police officer I know, and he was saying how the cost of heroin has dropped so much that it's the drug of choice, so to speak, because it's cheaper than a lot of the others. And that's scary. It really is.
Well, it's a very scary thing. When you think that most of these things occur, you know, obviously there's always people willing to try things and do things like that, but a lot of what we see with prescription painkillers, where it usually starts and escalates, is, I think, a lack of our own education of our society, education of our children, getting the message that this is not okay, that a pill is not the answer to everything. You know, they begin, they had, you know, small minor surgery, and all of a sudden, you know, they have, you know, 30 hydrocodone pills to take care of the pain, which is at best something that can be taken care of with, you know, an over-the-counter Motrin.
Right.
Just the physicians have become so lax in just prescribing, you know, opiates in pill form for everything. And then the ease of, I'll just take a pill, you know, it'll relieve my stress, it'll calm me down, and, you know, whatever pain I have now, I don't have it anymore. But we're such a society where we want instant gratification, and the levels of stress and responsibility become much greater, that we're always looking for a quick way of relieving this.
Right.
And
right.
I think a lot of that comes from our lack, again, a lack of educating our young, all the way through to, you know, to getting at our older working class population about the, you know, bad effects of all this.
And, you know, the sad part too, Doctor, is the fact that a lot of these young people see their parents doing it. You know, maybe not becoming addictive, but like you said, taking pills and, you know, for every little ache and pain, oh, I got to take this or I got to take that. And it's like sending a message that it's okay to do this.
Exactly. And that's where typically it begins, you know.
Right.
You see grandma or grandpa or mom or dad, you know, oh, they've got an ache. They reach for the cabinet, grab a pill. And, you know, curiosity gets the best of them. Next thing they're doing is trying it themselves.
Right. It's like this commercial that they have on television. I don't know if you've seen it or not, but there's a commercial where sometimes, and one, it's an older man, and another one, it's a woman. They go into the bathroom, they open up the medicine cabinet, and then they take a pill. And on the other side, there's a young woman or a young man, and they're mimicking what the older person is doing. And they're taking the pills, too. And it's like, you know, there it is. You know, there.
Yeah, exactly. It becomes so second nature to most people that they don't even realize that they're creating this sense of the quick fix.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Oh, now, you know, mommy, dad, or grandma, grandpa, they're feeling better now.
Right, right.
You know, they just went to the cabinet, grabbed a pill, and now everything's gone.
And it's a shame.
It's a shame that we don't really think about the example we are leaving our children and our grandchildren. But I think we have to become, and I think the only way to become more cognizant is, again, educating ourselves, educating the public that, you know,
right.
This is around us. This is not something that we can't say it's not going to happen to me or it's not really around me, it's somewhere else. This is across the country.
Yes.
And we need to be much better about educating ourselves and those around us about the negatives of painkillers, and begin to, you know, let them know that these are not acceptable norms and these are not things that we
right.
should take lightly.
Absolutely. Do you find that when you're dealing with the addiction, the people with addiction, do you find it affects males more than females, or is it pretty much equal?
Well, we have found actually over the last 10 years there's been some review of the data. Obviously, in years past, decades past, what was the category of drug addiction usually affected mostly the lower socioeconomic group.
Right.
But we found actually that this is now in becoming such a huge U.S. epidemic that it's not only bled into the older generation, but most of our first timers are in their early mid 20s.
Mm.
We're finding that now primarily it's 90%+ the white population, and more importantly to your question, over 50% of that has grown to become women.
Yeah.
So it's where before it was a smaller percentage of women, nowadays it's in excess of 50%, and it's felt that this is a product of the female population having much more stress brought upon them.
Mm-hmm.
You find a lot of single women.
Right, a lot of single parents too.
Single parent taking on all the stress of being the breadwinner for their family, for their children. It brings on a lot of things that may lead eventually to finding that outlet. And again,
right. Right.
We find the quick fix to make us feel better and be able to deal with all this.
Right.
As a matter of fact, there's another, I think in the Washington Post, there was an article that looked at the rise in the late 90s where roughly about 3% of the female white population had any relationship with opiate-related mm-hmm. deaths or complications. Where after about the 2010, they found that it had almost risen beyond 16%, and
wow.
even higher nowadays. So this is actually becoming even more widespread. It's not just the male dominated
right.
male problem. Women are becoming much more active in the working force and single
mm-hmm.
parent and
right.
so forth, the stress of life and work, again.
Yeah, and raising the kids and the whole nine yards. It's,
And again, they learn a lot of these habits by example.
Yeah,
and so,
exactly.
Again, we need to be very cognizant of this to be able to educate our children, educate our population as a whole. It's nothing... Nothing to turn a blind eye to at all.
No, right.
We need to get out there. We need to know what the warning signs are, know how to talk to our children, know how to talk to our kids at schools, and even as high into the colleges.
Right.
This needs to be talked about. This doesn't need to be, taboo anymore.
And, it's when you sit there, they don't talk to, say, 7th and 8th graders about depression or suicide or drugs, it's and they should. They really should.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, we talk to our children about so many things nowadays at a young
yeah,
age.
Yeah, exactly.
From bullying to smoking to obesity to,
Right. And
the hazards of the Internet. This should be right up there.
It's when I do presentations and we have a topic of, suicide, I always say that, and it's a fact, that the second leading cause of death on college campuses is suicide. And I says, but when the guy comes, when the representative of the college comes to the high school class, he doesn't say, oh, that's, that's a leading cause of people dying on our campus is suicide, But they should talk about it because it's happening.
Correct. Mental illness now, I think, is becoming, such more of a And maybe because we're talking about it more, people are beginning to realize it more. But, you know, with mental illness comes a lot of other addictions.
Oh, yeah.
You know, from alcohol to...
Yeah, the old self-medicating, you know.
Exactly, because there's always something trying, looking for that answer to make them feel better.
Right, right,
feel
absolutely.
Depressed and not feel like it's over.
Absolutely. Could you explain what the Eagle Advancement Institute is? I'm not quite sure I know.
Yeah, the Eagle Advancement Institute is a company that was started maybe about 6-7 years ago, and basically what we set out to do was to have not only have the preventative side of the teachings of drug addiction, but we developed nowadays what are referred to as medically assisted treatments for patients who do fall prey to opiate addiction.
Mm-hmm.
So we developed this process. It's referred to as Clarity, or the IOT, or Intensive Outpatient Opiate Treatment Program, where we don't rely on using other forms of opiates. If you know, in the general population, you know, people speak, well, I had a drug addiction, they treated me with methadone or Suboxone.
Right, right.
Those are methods of treatment in past, but are still used now. But what we felt is that the population was being essentially just, you know, pacified, because both methadone and Suboxone are synthetic opiates in and of themselves. So what you're doing is you're trying to treat the patient who has an opiate addiction with a little less opiate. You know,
right.
Try to keep them at a level that doesn't, you know, cause them to want to use more, that hopefully they'll just stay at that level. But our belief is, at the Eagle Advancement Institute, that we're merely perpetuating an already existing problem. The thing is that those are preparations that are a little more longer acting, or they are used in a outpatient setting. But what happens with this is that eventually this leads to abuse also.
Mm-hmm.
The person who's taking the methadone or taking the Suboxone finds a way to cut it, to, you know, use it
right.
IV,
right.
Use it in other forms other than its oral form to maintain a level of pacification for these patients. So we developed the Clarity process, which in an outpatient arena, what we do is we essentially treat the patient from all the forms of opiate addiction that exist. So we actually wipe the slate clean. And then when I mean the slate, they're the receptors in the body that are occupied by any form of synthetic or real opiate, and reverse all these things, and then put in play several medications that help to block or attenuate a normal response to an opiate. And by doing so, we can then take that opportunity in an aftercare process of re-educating and re-teaching that person, and giving him the support and or means to become clean. Statistically, the relapse rate is dramatically reduced the farther they get out to 12 months of staying clean.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of these places will just, you know, you go in, you go for a quick treatment, there's no follow-up, you're essentially, you know, led to go back into society as if you had nothing ever happened to you, but all the stresses, all the influences, everything else is still out there, and patients find no one to be able to help, to follow through, to follow up with them. And that's where we feel that the program, the Clarity program, not only gets these patients in, shows them reverse everything they've got going on, avoid any of this long drawn out withdrawal process that is associated with, you know, quick treatments like that.
Right.
But get them totally you know, off anything they're on, and then begin the treatment to prevent that craving, that want, and also have the support structures in place.
I hate to use the word opportunities, but is there opportunities that these addictions may present to the medical community, like trying something new or whatever the case may be?
You mean in the medical community utilizing or having the addiction problem? Or?
Right. Dealing with the addiction problem.
Well, within the medical community, obviously, like anywhere else, there's going to be the issue of addiction.
Mm-hmm.
The thing is, our role in the medical community is to try to find that finite way. And when I look at the finite way, I also think we have a responsibility in education on the preventative side.
Right.
But then on the treatment side, if there is those who fall through the cracks from the beginning, find them a resolution, and a resolution that can carry them on for the rest of their lives.
Right.
Not just a quick fix, and then
mm-hmm.
you're let to go back into society
right.
without the support structures in place.
What
with the clarity process, we find that if not all four out of five patients are an 80% success rate over 12 months, is one of our key milestones in finding long-term recovery. But we have that success rate because of how we process the patient through getting treated.
Right.
Where the standard, shall we say, you know, 30-day rehab program or quick fix, that's a success rate that's dismal at best,
mm-hmm.
5 to 10% rate.
Right. What a, you know, this might sound like a dumb
question. I'd add something to that.
Go ahead.
Larry, you'd asked the question about, you know, is there an opportunity right now? And, you know, sad as it may be, the prevalence of opiate addiction, such as it is today, and in particular because of the middle class and affluent population that's being affected, candidly, there are opportunities to draw people's attention to ways that we've been operating as a medical community, as a society, that maybe haven't always been around. And, you know, another sort of sad state of affairs, I suppose, is that the not in my backyard kind of mentality really needs to be wiped clean. You know, as you know, the suburban community, the middle class community, the affluent community needs to look itself in the mirror and say, we have a problem to deal with. The opportunity, though, is that you know, unlike you know, not very upwardly mobile inner city population, these are people who then generally wield power and influence of some sort. And so this gives a lot of the industry in general an opportunity to educate the public, to pursue investments in R&D. And really, at the end of this, we may end up, you know, with a set of tools at our disposal that are, you know, frankly, much, much more effective than what we began this whole cycle with, say, you know, 2 decades ago.
Okay.
So hopefully people are, you know, have their eyes open and are looking for advancements similar to this, you know, medically aided detoxification procedure that Dr. Borrego and the folks at Eagle have been advancing.
Okay. I like I said, this may be a not too intelligent question, but what is, like, a patient comes to you, however, you know, either through law enforcement forcing him to do this, or, but what's his experience with the withdrawal process? Do you have to bring him down if he's high when he comes to you, and then how does that work?
Well, in this arena, there's really no dumb questions, shall we say, or questions that we don't want asked. Again, we want this to be out there and in front of the public. Typically, our patients, and your example actually is some of the arenas we are trying to get involved in that referral process or treatment process, mm-hmm. which is law enforcement, our legal system, because a lot of times they may be the first ones to encounter these patients or potential patients we may be able to. Typically a patient may come to us because, you know, they finally decide they want to take the step and get clean, or family has intervened and finally decided, you know, we found something for you, and that's where the clarity, you know, process comes into play.
Right.
But if it were to come from law enforcement like that, like anything else, opiates as well as alcohol, obviously treating a patient in an acute phase is not ideal. So we've got to obviously get them to get to a point where they're not actually experiencing the withdrawal symptoms of, you know,
mm-hmm.
jittery, sweating, tachycardia, you know, fast heart rate, and the stomach cramps and whatnot. We get them to the point where they're just before that, so we can intervene with the treatment. And we intervene with the treatment at that time where we can attenuate or kind of slow those withdrawal symptoms to a point where we reverse everything very quickly.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So there's no real time for that withdrawal to occur. And then be able to treat them ongoing with preventative measures to avoid that craving again, the ability mm-hmm. to feel that euphoria or feel that stress release from using again. And that's why the ability to be able to get these patients right into a phase where they're beginning to experience that withdrawal, totally wipe everything clean, and start them on a go forward to shorten that phase of you know, agonizing withdrawal and painful withdrawal that they experience to a very short window, and then get them back on to the point where there's not that again, what I refer to as that craving or that desire or want to feel high again. And that's where a lot of this becomes a very big issue. Once they become so comfortable with the feeling of euphoria, the feeling that, oh, they're no longer any stress. So we have medications that can help and assist in that, avoiding that process to occur.
Okay.
But again, to the extent that how the patient comes to us, there is a certain timing to when we treat them and being able to treat them and have a long-term success rate.
Okay. I would assume that rehab probably depends on the individual as to whether they go inpatient or outpatient or a combination of both?
Well, in regards to that question, rehab has always been a big term that's used when people are, quote-unquote, recovering from an addiction.
Mm-hmm.
And typically in years past, rehab has been an inpatient or an in-facility treatment.
Right.
As of lately, what we've evolved into a lot of outpatient approaches where patients can be treated on an outpatient basis where they don't have to be kind of under lock and key for 30 days and, you know,
mm-hmm.
you'll go through all these difficult withdrawal processes along the way. We allow them to be treated in a kind of more relaxed outpatient type
okay.
setting where within 24 hours the treatment process is come and gone, and then we monitor them for, you know, another 36 to 48 hours to make sure that they understand how they're going to proceed. Medications have been, you know, started that have longer periods of timing where they actually work in preventing the cravings and preventing the desires to get back on utilizing this, and also have the support structure in play for them.
Okay. I would assume that there are some important factors involved with long-term recovery. Are they pros or cons? Or
well, we're going going to find that the biggest successes to a patient recovering is that they have a, aside from the immediate treatment and the immediate medications for long-term success, the important factors have to come from the support structures around the patient.
Mm-hmm.
Typically people who, the typical example is the alcoholic, when the alcoholic becomes sober and has done well, the last thing you want to do is put them back at tending bar.
Yeah, right, exactly.
So we have to be very cognizant of the surroundings for those patients, and also make sure that his immediate support structure has the buy-in and has the knowledge to be able to help that person. And the longer we get, and this is statistically significant to the point where patients who typically reach the 12-month treatment mm-hmm. milestone are going to have the highest rates of success. Reaching that milestone is a very kind of the significance of long-term recovery. And that has a lot to do with those around them, the treatments they receive, and how they see themselves moving forward.
Do you find that...
Nothing is 100%,
but no, I think it is exactly.
close to the best results for those patients as possible.
When you have relapses, do you find that they're more frequent with the opiate addictions than, say, alcohol?
Well, I think you're going to find that the relapses, again, are equivalents. The thing is that alcohol, just like opiates, are a drug.
Mm-hmm.
We just, as a society, consider alcohol, I'm just going to go have a drink with my friends, and it's okay. We don't say I'm going to go have a couple of pills with my friend.
Right.
Although the education of that is equivalent to the end result. Abuse of either one will lead to problems and complications that, could eventually lead to death.
Right.
So, again, we've got to go back to basics. Getting to our population, getting to our children, getting to our areas in society where the message can be relayed to them as well as we do anything else. I mean, we tell our kids that drinking's not acceptable or a good thing to do. But again, neither is the use of painkillers.
Mm.
And again, physicians have that responsibility to, when they write a prescription or don't, there's a reason and an explanation for that.
It's, to me, this is all very interesting, and it just, I just, find it just fascinating that, what all goes into, having someone recover, from, an opiate addiction. It just, to me, is like I said, it's very fascinating. Are there some common myths about an opiate addiction?
Well, I think the biggest myth, obviously, that are commonly held out in society are that, the first of all, that it was only a disease. Again, I think Kevin mentioned this too, that it was a disease of the low socioeconomic society.
Mm-hmm.
We need to bring that up to the people with influence, the people with money, to know that, that can help and assist in developing more of the message out there. That, the myths are not how they used to be. That only if you're of a low socioeconomic status can this affect you, but also that the treatments that are out there are available to any and everyone. So if you have that problem, it's nothing to be ashamed of. It's something that we as a medical community have abilities to help in treating with certain medications and methodologies out there. There are long-standing rehab centers or facilities that, you know, again, they go, they check in for 30 days, but for the most part, you hear about this in the celebrity arenas.
Right.
So-and-so checked in for 30 days, and, you know, 2 months later, they're at it again.
Right.
Well, that only points to one thing, is that, you know, we're obviously the message or the treatment is not sound enough, or is there's not enough support around that individual to keep them from doing it again.
Or they keep going back to the same...
Right, or going back to the same...
Like you said before, the alcoholic, you don't make them a bartender. Well, it's the same thing here. You know, these people, they go back to the same situations they were in before, and they do it all over again, you know.
Right.
So,
with the same people that influenced them the first time.
Right, exactly. You know, absolutely. You know, and it's just, I don't know, it just seems to me that it's not easy. I don't, you know, I quit smoking about 24 years ago. And to this day, if somebody lights up a Marlboro, I have to walk away. You know, because I know me. One drag, I'd be back smoking again, you know. But...
And again, Larry, this is no different than other forms of addiction.
Right. Exactly.
Food, smoking,
mm-hmm.
Excessive exercising. Everything has to have moderation, but there, once we get into that phase of addiction, and be it because, well, okay, we had surgery and we used the pain medication, but once that, everything heals, and we get to the point where we're healed, It's not so that 2 months later you remember, you felt really good and you took one of these pills and now it's okay to do it again, or again, the kids see the example of going to the cupboard and taking a pill and so they come out and they're smiling and happy. You know, it has to start somewhere, and we need to surround ourselves with the people and surround those people around those that can help them to, you know, stay.
Mm-hmm.
And have long-term recovery. And I think once, again, it's similar to mental illness, we need to, you know, get to the core of the issue and be able to treat it so that, you know, they can continue on and have a normal life of not having to have all these influences and stress. And that may mean not only being treated, you know, utilizing something like the clarity process to get them to where they got to get to.
Mm-hmm.
But maybe they need to have a change in lifestyle after that, a job change. Something else has to give.
Right.
To get to that point.
Well, like I said, I know with me, they put me on an operating table, turned me upside down, and scraped my vocal cords and told me it was the only time they could take the polyps off it. And the next time they'd have to take them out, and I'd be talking through one of those, you know, voice things through the throat.
Exactly.
With my big mouth, I couldn't do that, you know. So that was something I just couldn't do, you know. So that was my incentive to quit smoking, you know.
Right.
It wasn't easy, I'll grant you that, but you know, it was like the alternative, you know. Do you find that
you have to look at things of, you know, continuing to smoke or continuing to use opiates? Where is it going to get you?
Right, exactly.
Using alcohol. You end up 6 feet under or shortening your lifespan
mm-hmm.
to what you could be, and more importantly, the example you set to those around you.
Right, exactly. You know, do you find that you see people that come in with an addiction that they also have a mental health condition?
Well, not being a psychiatrist, it's hard to really determine, they've got, other things going on. But, drug addiction of itself, there is some component of mental illness associated with that.
Mm-hmm.
Just the mere addiction, you know.
Right.
Entity itself. That's why the patient, the treatment as a whole not only has to be the taking care of the immediate issues, but there has to be that the ability to have them, and we typically do this, we evaluate our patients beforehand to see what we can amass from not only their health history, but what they've been through and what's going to happen from that point forward after treatment.
Mm-hmm.
So we do have psychologists, psychiatrists, you know, that get involved in the early phases of their treatment regimen so that we can assess that on a go forward and, you know, prevent any other things that may be, or treat other portions of that patient's health that may influence them from relapsing.
Right, right. I know we see a lot, you know, a lot of families come to us and say, you know, their son, daughter, whatever, you know, has been this, you know, been diagnosed with, say, bipolar, but they're also doing drugs, or they're doing alcohol, or they're doing alcohol drugs and have bipolar. And it's very hard to get that individual to recognize what they're doing to themselves, you know? And so I imagine would be, and in some cases, it would probably be the same thing with, you know, someone who has an opiate addiction. You know, they like it. They enjoy it. It makes them feel good, whatever. Why would I want to quit, you know? Well, you know, it's what could be down the road for you is what, you know, would want to make you quit, you know? But
exactly. And that there may be mental illness that's separate from the addiction,
mm-hmm.
or vice versa.
Right, right.
I think treating the patient as a whole, obviously. The one thing we want to do is avoid the further, you know, destructive process that occurs with alcohol or opiates, but
right.
You know, at the same, once that's handled, you know, if there is underlying mental illness, we need to treat that portion of the person that we have a lot of good medical data to support treatment modalities and follow-up and so forth. So yeah, which it's kind of, which comes first, the chicken or the egg?
Right.
You want to make sure that you've got all the facts before you and you're treating the patient as a whole, but back to the point being that, you know, opiate addiction has become such a large epidemic, we need to get to the bottom of that and maybe just be dealing with patients, you know,
right,
mental illness first to avoid this, or again, treat the addiction and then be able to treat the mental illness that may be associated with it.
Exactly. I don't know what SAMHSA is. Could you explain that? SAMHSA?
SAMHSA is the Substance Abuse and Mental Health Services Administration.
Ah, okay.
They're an entity that, you know, obviously support and back the medically assisted treatments,
right,
that we're trying to, you know, get out there to, you know, get insurers to accept and understand that treatment for these are just as important as treating diabetes or hypertension.
Mm-hmm. Right. Right.
And I know for long times back, you know, insurance companies wouldn't recognize obesity as a medical,
yes,
problem.
Right.
We get them to accept and understand that mental illness, substance abuse, like anything else, is a medical condition. And we have ways of treating patients that can successfully get long-term results.
Right. I have a real quick question in the last two and a half minutes we have left. Rapid detox, is it dangerous or isn't it? Because you see these movies where they got them, you know, in a hotel room and they're strapped down and, you know, whatever. It seems to me like that could be pretty dangerous, you know.
Yeah, and again, like anything in the wrong hands, wrong results can happen.
Right.
You know, a long time back when rapid detox, as it was referred to, and it's one of the myths of treatment that obviously is out there, and people, you know, I'm not going to undergo that rapid detox. I could die from that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the thing is you have to do your homework, obviously, too, but we at Eagle, when we set out to do this and develop the clarity processes, you know, we're not going to do anything that's going to endanger the patient. We want to get the results we need, but rapid detox was something that basically, you know, they put the patient under anesthesia, tried to reverse everything, and then wake them up and, again, hope that when you woke up that everything was done and over with and, you know,
right,
you would be cured. And that's where a lot of the bad results occurred. That's where a lot of they weren't prepared to deal with what they were going to do all of a sudden. And now, you know, the patients were at a worse position or otherwise, you know, not being handled. But when it comes to what is detoxification, you know, it can encompass a lot of things. But basically our goal in clarity is to set out and take care of the immediate issues right away. What people fear of quitting is that feeling of withdrawal and
right.
How they're going to feel, how it's going to make them feel. It's just like anything else. You can't really cold turkey quit smoking unless you slow get through the process. But we've developed a way of being able to do that relatively quickly compared to a lot of other ways. And
Doctor, I have to interrupt because we got about 30 seconds left. If you'd like to give either an email or a phone number if anyone wants more info.
Sure. I mean, and they can reach us at the Eagle Advancement Institute. I think it's www.eagleadvancementinstitute.com.
Okay.
And also there is a direct line to our Clarity detoxification entity, and that number, if they wanted to reach out to Clarity, it's 1-855-346-9388. And we have, you know, callers that can answer questions, help guide them a lot, you know, and even set them up if they require treatment to be able to get them over this addiction.
Okay, Doctor. I appreciate it. I really thank you for being on. I have to go because we're out of time.
Okay, my pleasure, Larry.
No,
thank you
I would really like to have you back again. So I thank you again, and have a good day and a good rest of the week.
Thank you so much.
Right. Bye-bye.
USA Radio News. I'm Kelly Sloan. Taking military action against Iran's nuclear program is still an option, according to a senior Israeli government official. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu says the framework deal is dangerous. And South Carolina Senator Lindsey Graham told CBS Face the Nation that the deal could have been better.
Allow a new president in 2017, a Democrat or Republican, to take a crack at the Iranian nuclear program.
But President Obama wants Congress to take a back seat.
Senate Foreign Relations Committee Chairman Bob Corker is sticking with his plan of a vote next week on his bill that would give lawmakers the power to approve any agreement with Iran. Appearing on Fox News Sunday, Corker said congressional involvement would help make sure the bill stands the test of time and will keep Iran from getting a nuclear weapon.
That was AP correspondent Jerry Bodlander. Kenya is responding militarily to last week's university attack by al-Shabaab. Kenyan warplanes have attacked positions of the terror group in Somalia. This is USA Radio News.
Would you wait several days for your shower to get hot? Would you wait several days to feel the full effect of relief from your nasal congestion? Flonase Allergy Relief Nasal Spray could take that long. But if you're congested now and you want powerful relief now, use Afrin No Drip. Afrin starts working in seconds and keeps working for 12 hours. So why wait several days to feel the full effect? When you can start to get relief in seconds with Afrin. Afrin, powerful congestion relief without the wait. Use as directed.
Red Wing Shoes salutes the modern craftsman.
Hey, carpenter, here's to the work you do. Vincent Van Gogh ain't got nothing on you. Though you don't work on canvas, you're an artist just the same. And your work never comes without a frame.
Find the right boots for your job at your local Red Wing retailer.
Republican Senator Rand Paul of Kentucky is preparing for a 2016 presidential campaign. AP correspondent Philip Elliott says a time for change is the likely theme.
To hear him tell it, America's falling apart and needs a leader like him who'll put the pieces back together. He sees himself as a truth teller, offering his prescriptions on how to fix the United States, and he sees very little reason to be hopeful about it.
Paul is expected to make an announcement tomorrow in Kentucky. Hillary Clinton is expected to launch her campaign for president sometime in the next 2 weeks. The goal reportedly is to make the campaign more about voters.